There's an argument to say that the business end of the Champions League provides the highest quality of football as the big guns turn their fire on each other. But it's some teams' flaws that make them as fascinating as their strengths, and there are some wounded animals lurking in the quarterfinals. The last eight could be as absorbing as ever. I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is Football Only Better. There's always a high level of quality on this show, starting with the magnificent Mark O'Hare. Mark, let's start with Arsenal's clash with Bayern. Arsenal don't have the Champions League pedigree that Bayern have, but Bayern don't have the structure or the form that the Gunners currently enjoy.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely spot on, really. This is a fascinating fixture for a number of reasons, really, but not least because the last three times Arsenal have faced Bayern Munich, they've lost 5-1. And Bayern Munich have got a very good record coming to England in the Champions League. Their only defeat, I think, in recent trips, was at Man City last season, which is kind of understandable. However, you look at those head-to-heads of Arsenal, the last of which came 7 years ago, and, you know, Arsenal are a very different team than they were back then, and Bayern
Yes.
certainly are too. You know,
Set
we've talked
those
about
stats
Arsenal.
on fire. They're no good.
Exactly. They're pretty meaningless. And Arsenal, we talked about it on the Premier League show a few times now. They've been making steady improvements under Mikel Arteta, shown really the steps of progression, I think, this year. Best really by taking points off Man City home and away, and largely nullifying City on both occasions, really. And you know, they've got legitimate Premier League title claims now after going fairly close last season and sort of leading the pack. They are a force to be reckoned with. I think the only major negative I have against them is perhaps as a club, their recent experience at this level is lacking. And that was a stick used to beat them, really, following their two relatively underwhelming efforts against Porto. They were
Well, that have
quite
taught
right.
them a lot. I've heard that a lot, that, oh, you know, Porto, they were terrible against, blah, blah, blah. I get that. But you learn a lot from coming through a grueling tie like that against a team that just wants to kick you from pillar to post from the first whistle to the last.
Yeah, and I think it's very important we don't labour the point of that Porto tie, because that is going to be very, very different to the tie against Bayern Munich. You know, I wasn't impressed by Arsenal over those two legs against Porto by any stretch. And sure, you could perhaps look to their lack of experience in the Champions League as a reason for that. But as you say, Porto went there with a game plan, home and away, and Arsenal struggled against it. But stylistically, I think this is very, very different to, you know, playing Bayern than it is compared to playing Porto. Bayern may look to see what Porto did, what Porto did well, and try and replicate that. But they're not going to kind of come
They
here
could
and batter down
try.
the hatches, and they don't quite have the players to sort of dominate in that sort of sense. Whereas I think Arsenal, well, I guess Thomas Tuchel and his team will be confident as well in their own ability. They won't have to sort of shapeshift their own style to match Porto to try and get the better of Arsenal, because they'll look at themselves and say, well, individually, we absolutely have the quality to hurt Arsenal. So the game plan, I think, isn't going to be requiring a massive overhaul. But yeah, they have to find a middle ground to it too, because this Arsenal team is very strong. And at the moment, it's very difficult to be confident in Bayern. There's just too many instances now this season. You know, you can't just count it on one hand now. You have to use at least two to sort of figure out how poor Bayern have been in so many games. You know,
Yeah.
the weekend, I kind of dismissed the game against Heidenheim. Yes, they blew a 2-0 lead and lost that 3-2. They would never, ever normally do that in sort of standard circumstances in the Bundesliga. But I guess with the Champions League tie on the horizon and the Bundesliga title race kind of all done and dusted, perhaps they're allowed a no-show. But more alarming for me was a no-show in the Clásica, the away tie at Lazio, the Pokal loss against Saarbrücken, being smashed up by Leverkusen, smashed up by Frankfurt away from home as well. You know, there's so many reasons for this. And then you look to the team news coming into this game, and I expect some of these players to be fit and available. They tend to miraculously recover, but there's doubts over Neuer, Sané, Coman, Pavlovic. At centre back, you're looking at potentially De Ligt and Dier. Ulreich might be in goal. So there's clear weaknesses there. The flip side is you've got enormous threats, kind of captain obvious there, but Musiala and Kane in forward areas.
Yeah.
So Arsenal will have to be on their guard. And I think Both sides will treat this game with an element of caution, being the first leg of a knockout tie. So, if the goal line was around three, I'd be looking at taking the unders there, knowing four goals is required for a losing bet. Stinch wonderfully kind of acknowledged the goals per game output and the lack of over 2.5 goals games in knockout first leg ties since the away goals rule was abolished. But for my official selection here, I'm just going to back Arsenal on the nose here at 1.8, purely on trust. They have been the most eye-catching Premier League side this calendar year, where City and Liverpool, I think, have enjoyed a couple of hiccups along the way. The Gunners, since coming back from Dubai, haven't really wavered. Defensively, they are absolutely exceptional, whereas Bayern's backline, I think, can be exploited. And bar their sort of superior experience, I think Arsenal are quite rightfully and deserved fair favourites here. So, yeah, I'm going to back them at 1.8 to win this game.
Thrilled to say that after a long spell on the sidelines, the data doctor is back. Jake Oscarthorpe in the squad with all of the facts and figures we need. Jake, it's great to have you back on the show. Bayern's attacking numbers this season, terrific. Right up there with some of the best Bundesliga teams we've ever seen. But they are an utter mess in transition against the best teams. And they were caught out again and again against Dortmund in the Klassiker, as Mark referenced. And even middling teams are catching them out. So you think of Saka, maybe Martinelli, some of the damage you can do on in transition. It looks like a bad matchup for Bayern, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And they're kind of in a little bit of no man's land in the sense of they're not good enough to go to the Emirates, sit in a deep block and try and counter-attack themselves because they're not organised enough. I think Arsenal would probably prefer that, to be honest, and it would mean that they could squeeze higher up the pitch. But at the same time, if they take the game to Arsenal and try and outscore Arsenal, then again, like you said, that transition, they're going to leave themselves so exposed and it could become a bit of a hiding. So, yeah, I'm really intrigued to see what they do, how they set up, also how Arsenal set up as well. Because now that the away goal's kind of been abolished, I mean, it kind of just throws everything back up into the air as to how you approach a home game. It used to be a little bit more defensive in the sense, right, we don't want to concede an away goal that could obviously count double, maybe. Whereas now, I think it's almost like a you want to really take the game to your visitors and really put rack up a score if you can ahead of a potentially tricky away game. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Arsenal, with the way in which Bayern are playing, rack up two, three goals, win this one quite comfortably, and have a bit of a lead to take back to go across to Germany and defend. Having said that, when you see this kind of price about a player that is the best goal scorer in Europe, we're talking 3.25. About Harry Kane to score any time in this game,
Yes, bonkers.
I think it's a must back. I don't think, it doesn't matter to me how good Arsenal have been defensively recently. It doesn't matter how dysfunctional Bayern have been. This bloke just sniffs out goals like no one we've seen in recent years. And it could even be a case of Bayern Munich are losing 4-0 going into the 85th minute. Harry Kane, touch, edge of the box, bang, 4-1. Done. That's your money. Well played. But it is worth noting that Arsenal, for all the defensive solidity, limiting chances, they have conceded in 10 of 15 home league games this season. And, we talk about the Champions League. They've not really had a very tough run, have they? Played PSV, Sevilla, Lens, and Porto. So not really been tested, you would say, to the level that they're
Lost
going
a
to be
couple of
tested.
those.
They did, yeah. But at home, they've kept four clean sheets in those. But yeah, Bayern, I mean, Kane, he scored 32 goals in the Bundesliga, six in the Champions League. He's averaging 0.9 expected goals per 90 across the entire campaign. And, that's even before we talk about his record against Arsenal. Now, obviously, that is, like we were talking about before, those kind of stats could sometimes go out the window. But he scored 14 in 17, just for people who like to back players that play well and score against certain clubs. Kane does that. And I think this price looks huge. And yeah, I'm with Mark. I think Arsenal to win is definitely worthwhile. A shorter play, but slightly bigger. Kane to score looks massive.
Last but not least, trade end tipster Emmett O'Keefe is with us. Thrilled that for once he doesn't have to talk about how bizarre Manchester United are. Emmett, what's the angle here? Because certainly both teams to score, as Jake's just alluded to, as part of some kind of bet builder, screams out to me.
I'm wary of taking on Arsenal's defense. I think like there's like I think I
Bayern
think
don't
this.
draw many blanks, though, do they?
They
In
don't,
truth.
but like Arsenal have conceded four goals in 11 games since the kind of since the Christmas break. I think this is like my kind of My general point is that this, I think, this Arsenal team has played like, I think they've played like the best team in Europe since that winter break. Like they've won like 10 out of 11 games. They've scored 38 goals and conceding four. Like their form is just incredible. And
What did they do in Dubai? Managers all over the world would be thinking, what did they do? What hotel did they stay in? Where did they go? Because they have been transformed, really, haven't they?
it does look like as well that Mikel Arteta held something back in the first half of the season because they are pressing, I think, with greater intensity in since that return than they were in the first half of the season. I watched them as well. I remember that Man United home game where the ramshackle Man United were kind of a tight offside decision away from winning the game. And I remember thinking this isn't a title contender at all. And I think they're like, as in they've clearly improved and they are playing with far greater intensity and they're kind of playing in that like. It's a kind of let's be frank. They're making games boring to watch now because
Yes.
their press is so oppressive that they're turning these games into these one-sided beatdowns where they have 18 shots and the opposition has three, and it's a kind of comfortable win. Bayern do have the attack to kind of trouble them, but it's just impossible to trust Bayern Munich. Like they've conceded 17, sorry, 14 goals in their last seven Bundesliga matches. Like they're as Mark kind of mentioned the injury issues, and in terms of like Arsenal's inexperience in Europe and the kind of Porto game being a negative, I do agree. I thought Porto were could easily have qualified. Obviously, went to a shootout, but like Arsenal didn't really open up Porto over the two legs. But I think that probably says more about how good a defensive organizer Sergio Conceição is. I don't think there's very few teams in Europe that could have done to Arsenal what Conceição did. And Bayern just will not play that way. They don't have the players to play that way. And like their style of play is totally different to Porto. I think Bayern Munich will be an easier tie for Arsenal than Porto, or even if the prices are closer. Like I think there's a decent possibility that Arsenal will blow Bayern away in the first half, and the tie will be over in the first leg. I think the price has really moved on kind of Arsenal to qualify before, say, last week. The qualify odds have been relatively close. Arsenal around 4 to 5, Bayern around 11 to 10. We've seen Arsenal now moving the exchange to 1.66, which is a huge swing. I think the market is moving in Arsenal's way. I can see it even moving further over the coming days. I fancy Arsenal. Like the only thing that would stop me from kind of maybe thinking of a total blowout is Mark Stinchcombe's kind of numbers about the first leg for first legs turning towards under goals. And I'll give those numbers a bit more context when we look at later matches. But the reason I wouldn't fancy unders in this game is just the Bayern Munich factor and their lack of defensive prowess. But so the way I'd look to get on Arsenal would be Arsenal to win at halftime, to be winning at halftime and full time. That's clicked in six of Arsenal's last seven wins. And the only reason it didn't click against Brentford was a ridiculous Ramsdale mistake. I think we've seen Arsenal the way they're playing. It's these really aggressive starts where they're trying to blow these teams away with this aggressive press and kind of getting ahead early before kind of dropping their intensity. I think we'll see something similar against Bayern. The way Bayern have been struggling for confidence, I'm sure Arsenal will really go after them early on. And the second angle I like is Gabriel Magalhães in the kind of shots and goals markets. Like since that kind of Christmas break. Gabriel has 17 shots and 8 shots on target in his last 13 matches, which are incredible numbers for a centre half, unheard of. He had 5 shots against Brighton again, which is again insane numbers for a centre half. I just think with the amount of corners and set pieces Arsenal will have, he'll definitely get opportunities. So I like him at 5-2 for a shot on target, and at 15-2 to score any time on the sports book. I think he might get a little bit better on him to score any time on the exchange as well.
Got some chunky numbers out of that game. We know that injury time goals can be a pain in the pocket if they ruin your bets. And now you've got 90-minute payout to rescue you if the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands. Your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. Real Madrid face Manchester City in a repeat of last season's semi-final. Jake, this is quite a tough one. Because City haven't been at their best at times this season, but we know they're capable of raising their game at any moment. Real Madrid are obviously well clear at the top of La Liga. And yet against Leipzig, I thought they were the worst team in both legs. And if Leipzig had actually taken their chances, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. We'd be talking about RB Leipzig against City again. because they always seem to play each other for some reason. Strange game then to judge, really.
You mean Real Madrid did a Real Madrid in the Champions League and played
yeah,
rubbish and
that.
Qualified?
Yeah, imagine
no
that.
No way.
Never happened
yeah.
before.
Yeah, no, I agree. They weren't great over the two legs. They were lucky in the end that their kind of extra quality shone through and kind of got them over the line. I think this is going to be a fascinating tie. I am, like you said, very happy that we've got a Real Madrid-Man City as opposed to Leipzig-Man City. Because this is going to be really interesting to see how both managers and both teams like approach this game. Because I think you look at Real Madrid and they have superstars. Obviously, Jude Bellingham is the main one. Vinicius, they've not got Benzema anymore from that tie last season. But what they have is they've got a massive deep squad full of players that have got specialties in different areas. So Ancelotti could do literally anything across the midfield that to try and stump what Man City do. You've got your Camavinga, you've got Kroos, you've got Modric still knocking around, you've got Tchouaméni, you've got Valverde. You could do whatever he wanted to. He could play a 4-4-2 diamond, he could play a wide 4-4-2, he could play a wide 4-3-3. I think that tactical battle is going to be really interesting. And I also think Madrid have probably got a little bit more quality and control off the bench over the two legs. I know City's bench is always good, but I think that that could be really beneficial to them. And I also, Real Madrid haven't played this last weekend. They haven't played last midweek.
Yeah.
They played once since the international break. Man City played three times. And I know Pep's rotated. They've had a couple of fairly easy wins there against Crystal Palace in the end and Aston Villa. But it's still minutes on the players' legs. And I think, again, that could be a small advantage, not just to Real Madrid, but Barcelona, to Atletico Madrid, we'll talk about later. So I do think Madrid have got a better chance of qualifying this season, obviously, than they had last season. But in this game in particular, I'm very surprised to see Madrid at the price they are. I think Madrid draw no bet is a definite runner at 2.17. But I've been drawn to something a little bit bigger. A player who's in red hot form for Real Madrid, and it's Vinicius. Vinicius Jr. to score and to be carded, which is at 12.5 to 1. The referee,
wow,
Francois,
that's massive.
It's big, and I mean, you could say recency bias is coming in here, but it's won in all of his last four matches, four outings. He's scored and been booked in all of his last four. And the reason for that is because he's getting in better scoring positions, obviously, why he's getting scoring more goals. But he's also become much more of a cynical fouler. He's delaying the game when Madrid are in front. The unsportsmanlike conduct, squaring up to people, all that kind of stuff is in Vinicius' wheelhouse. And the referee is a good appointment, really. It's Francois Letessier. I think I pronounced that okay.
Yes, very good.
And your French was better last weekend. I'll give you that, Kev. 4.5 cards per game is he's averaging this season. Vinicius was, last four matches, he scored six times. He's had 12 shots. He's had 9 shots on target. He's had 4 yellow cards. He's booked in both Champions League legs against Leipzig last time out. And yeah, we saw Palace cause serious problems for City on the break. And I think Real Madrid will try and create those kind of scenarios again where City squash high, Madrid try and nick the ball back, and then they're away with Rodrigo, Vinicius and Bellingham in support. And yeah, obviously going the other way, Vinicius is likely as anybody just to pull someone down, isn't he? He's running away from him. So I think that's got quite a decent chance of giving us something to shout for at a big price. Yeah, I think I definitely will be focusing on Vinicius, especially if Kyle Walker is absent for Man City. I think that's a huge blow, potentially, and maybe a huge positive for Madrid's chances.
I think Vinicius gets targeted a lot by the opposition as well, who try and bait him into getting into these flashpoints. So I think that's a really good shout. Emmett, yeah, it is a really intriguing one, this, because Real Madrid, when you bear in mind what they've done, they've got to this stage of the Champions League. They're 8 points clear of Barcelona at the top of La Liga. And yet, Thibaut Courtois has been out pretty much the whole season. David Alaba has been out for a long, long time. He's been out for months now. Edem Militao was injured really early on and has been out for months. So that squad depth actually has been really tested, hasn't it?
It really has. I think this is kind of the acid test. I was thinking to me, like, the main questions I had coming into this tie was one of what's changed since last season, because obviously Man City were clearly the superior side over two legs last season. And I think City are probably slightly worse. Like, by the numbers, Last season, they were averaging 2.47 goals per game in the Premier League. This season, it's only 2.25. Last season, they conceded 0.86 goals in the Premier League. This season, it's 106. So small numbers, but those like over a season are quite significant. So the numbers would say, I think the City are slightly worse. And I think probably one of the main reasons in terms of their attacking output dropping is just Erling Haaland having a poor season finishing, where he's kind of underperformed his XG, whereas last season he was exceptional and kind of overperformed in terms of his finishing. I think Real, with the addition of Jude Bellingham, I think have improved since last season. Their underlying data slightly improved. And I think just with, I think in terms of like a counter-attacking threat, like last season they had kind of Karim Benzema, who was kind of on the slide really, whereas this season, I think if you've Rodrigo, Vinicius, and Bellingham, I think that's a lot more for City to worry about
Yeah,
than kind
agreed.
of than last season. And I kind of and with the kind of the break that Madrid have had coming into this game, I think that there are just edges in their favor that would make me kind of I'm prepared to kind of forgive them the kind of Leipzig performance where they kind of played within themselves and were kind of, I think probably fortunate they were kind of Lewis Openda in particular had a particularly poor finishing day over the two legs. But I think at least in the first leg, Madrid can kind of frustrate City and keep it close. But the angle I liked here primarily was the unders angle. So I'll just talk about from a Mark Sinchka mentioned this, that basically since the switch to away, such kind of to getting rid of away goals from the kind of 21-22 season onwards, we've had three seasons. This 77% of first legs have gone under 2.5 goals, which is a really high number. And I was just looking to see what's the kind of what was the rate like when away goals were there. So if you look at the three seasons, so that would be 2020, 21, 2018, 19, and 2017, 18. But the kind of the season I've left out there, people might remember only had one leg because of COVID. But in those three seasons, 40% of the first legs went under 2.5. Like that's like so
That's a
you're nearly it's in
huge
so
jump,
it's
isn't
a
it?
huge jump. So I think it's and maybe I think maybe the markets maybe quite haven't quite picked up on it in the sense that like I was looking at the kind of the. If you look at the under 2.5 goals for all of these first legs, three of them are odds against, and the kind of Atletico Dortmund, which I'll talk about later, is kind of fairly close to even. So I think there's a bit of edge in that, and I like under 2.5 goals here. Also, not just because of those stats, kind of macro stats I mentioned. The other thing is just Pep Guardiola's approach to these games. I think it's very, very like Alex Ferguson, where Ferguson was basically scarred by some of these kind of United's exits. There was one particular one in the early 2000s against Real Madrid. Vicente del Bosque, the Real Madrid manager, described it as kind of tactical anarchy from United. I think that really hurt Ferguson personally, and he went this kind of as he went on. Their approach to away games, they're really stinking the joint out. People remember playing Wayne Rooney and Park Ji-sung as auxiliary fullbacks and looking to really frustrate the opposition the first leg before having a go in the second leg. And I think Guardiola, again, I mentioned Arteta earlier, like the Man City the last couple of years, I think are again their matches are mostly quite grim to watch. Like there's a few exceptions, like kind of Chelsea earlier in the season, but it's these kind of it's very safe kind of defensive possession and kind of like trying to looking to shut down the game first and kind of not push the fullbacks forward to stop counterattacks. I think we saw that last season when obviously it has been effective. I'm not denying it's kind of effectiveness, but I'm just it's
Yeah, but it's not great to watch, though, isn't it? And
from
it's
a,
interesting.
yeah.
You guys have already mentioned what Arteta's doing at Arsenal, right?
Yeah.
And he is mini Pep, whether he likes it or not. You know,
Definitely.
that's been his largest influence tactically, and he's doing some of the same things in terms of that whole central ethos is we cannot lose control. We have to control everything if we can, and that leads to effective football, winning football, but quite dull football. Certainly not Manchester United football.
No. I think like it's I yeah. Well, I won't go into too much, but I kind of in some ways I would hope Liverpool could get over the line here because I think their games have that bit more variance. Where I think like Pep Guardiola, kind of, he despises counter-attack. He despises end-to-end. He despises kind
Yes.
of what the fans enjoy in some ways. But just kind of moving back on point, last year, and if you look at City's approach in first legs away from home against RB Leipzig, again, a team that they won 6-0 against in the second leg, that was 1-1 in the first leg, and City were quite cagey. Listeners might remember the first leg in the Bernabeu last season. Again, it was 1-1. City had like 0.6 expected goals in that game. Like, Man City do not have 0.6 expected goals in many football matches. So I think that speaks to the kind of a conservative approach. And I think we'll see that again from Guardiola, given the threat that Real Madrid have in the counter attack. And I think there's also, you might have the factor that I think Madrid surely will have the second leg in Man City on their minds. I think I'm not sure. I think Madrid will be afraid of City too. So I think all those signs maybe point to maybe a slightly cagey and conservative first leg. And I like under 2.5 goals here at odds against.
Yeah, Mark, it's intriguing when you look at the potential tactics here because, as Emmett's alluded to, City aren't going to take too many risks. And yet, I imagine Real Madrid's best chance really is to try and be organised and then try and unleash Vinicius and Bellingham on the counter if they can and cause a bit of chaos that way.
Yeah, and I think they have the potential to be quite effective in this game. I think some people will remember last year's meetings and just probably, remember City steamrolling Real Madrid 4-0 at the Etihad in the second leg and think, well, City should really go here and win. But actually, if you think back to the first leg, it was quite a tight encounter, ended 1-1. The two goals were worldies, really. De Bruyne and Vinicius scored from distance, didn't they? Some
Yes,
fantastic finishing.
yes.
But the game was quite competitive for the most part. There wasn't a huge amount of goal mouth action outside of that. City were started the game strongly, but Real Madrid finished it stronger. I wouldn't be too surprised to see something different here, but I'm happy to oppose Man City at the lines and prices, actually. I agree with everything that Jake and Emmett have already said. Jake obviously did a great kind of precursor on this kind of being more pro Real Madrid than Man City at the lines and prices, and I totally agree. I'm going to be a little bit more pragmatic by backing Real Madrid with a quarter goal start on the Asian handicap because we're getting 1.83. So we'll make money as long as Real Madrid avoid defeat. The only way you lose your stake is if Man City win. And I'm not going to make a massive meal of it, but I've mentioned a few times on the weekend podcast that we've been kind of expecting Manchester City to come to the fore for a few weeks, for a few months now, and they've not really kind of done it consistently. You could look to the last week and say, well, they've beaten and scored four goals against both Villa and Palace, but Villa were rotated, City rotated, against Palace they still conceded twice and were sort of chasing early on. So I'm not completely convinced we've seen the Man City of yesteryear at this time of the season yet. And obviously they could come here and put on a performance, but I just want to pick out and pick on some of their recent performances and results, especially away from home against the big teams that matter. So they have gone 4 from 4 away in the Champions League this season, but their last 16 away tie against FC Copenhagen, let's be honest, FCK aren't really your standard knockout opponent. They're a little bit below that level. So I'm going to exclude them from the argument. And before facing FCK, City's recent away Champions League knockout record reads 0 wins in 6. Now, this season in the Premier League, City are winless against the top four. It's 1 win in 7 against the top five. This is home and away. And last season, they won once away against the top nine in the Premier League. So, whilst there's been a significant number of draws, and I do think the draw is a runner here, there's not many victories there at all. And that kind of, for me, feeds into what Emmett's been talking about, the sort of conservatism about City when they go away. They're almost quite happy to pick up points where they can, pick up draws and then beat the better teams at home, or at least rely on that Etihad record. And just to chuck more into the mix, you look at the team news, Nathan Ake and Kyle Walker are, I believe, ruled out now of the first leg. Kvaratskhelia went off at the half time at the weekend against Palace. He should be fine. But either way, you're not having Walker's recovery pace against Vinicius. I know you might have Rico Lewis or Akanji filling in there, but I
It's not the
prefer
same,
Walker.
though, is it? It's not the same.
Absolutely not the same, no. So I feel there's an edge there for Real Madrid in that counter attack, as you've already outlined. And look, I'm not completely in love with Real Madrid at all. got enormous respect and appreciation for their ability to turn up on big nights and progress in this competition without sort of producing magic moments consistently. But I think this season they've largely hit sort of 7 and 8s out of 10 for the most part, if that. La Liga has been quite a poor standard league compared to previous years, with some of the big boys kind of failing to hit their usual heights. But you can't deny that Real Madrid are still difficult to beat. They're unbeaten in 90 minutes in 35 games this season. And over the last 2 years, they've only lost twice at the Bernabeu across all comps. Plenty of big teams have come here and failed to beat them. So, you know, no Alaba, no Courtois, which is a blow. But I think they've had enough time working about those two to figure out a system and a structure which works for them. So I'm quite happy to have them with a quarter goal start. And whoever starts at right back, whether it's Akanji or Rico Lewis up against Vinicius, I'll be looking at the fouls and potentially a card market too. And just on Jake's cards selection there, yeah, Letexier is a very positive appointment for cards too.
Well, elsewhere, there's a battle between Spain and Germany, Atletico Madrid against Borussia Dortmund. Emmett, they're quite odd teams, both of them really. Atletico at home, sensational. You know, win almost every game. Atletico away, wretched. All over the shop. Lost at Cadiz not that long ago. Borussia Dortmund, they don't do the whole home and away split. They just lurch from really good in the Clásica to really ordinary on Saturday when they lost at home to Stuttgart. So it's good luck with this, frankly, trying to predict what's going to happen here because they're both all over the place.
Yeah, I agree. I think I was looking this weekend trying to think because, as the listeners most likely know, the winner of Atletico versus Dortmund would play PSG or Barcelona in the semi final. So I was thinking, like, which of the kind of four teams either side of the draw was there an each way bet to be had on the outright? But I can't get a handle on any of the teams really. I find these. But I find it very, very hard to be confident in any of the four sides. And I think as you said there, like if Dortmund can kind of keep this to a one goal loss, they're actually in quite good shape given the kind of home and away splits. We kind of as
I think
you
they go through. I think if they only lose by one goal,
they're in great shape. Yeah,
yeah. I think they go through because I just think Atletico are so far below the level away from home compared to what they do at home, that for me, it is about Dortmund just trying to get out without too many scars and then win it in the second leg.
Yeah, we saw that in the first leg too. Because I think if you look at that tie overall, like I think the tie, I know we scored in that first leg, but if Marcus Thuram had stayed on for Inter, because he came, if you just don't remember, he came off for Marco Arnautovic, who's not really quite on the same level. And if like, Inter nearly blew Atletico away in that first leg, should have. On the balance of play, it was more of a 2-0, 3-0 type of game. And if it's 2-0, 3-0 Inter win, it's a very different second leg. But in that second leg, I think Inter are an outstanding team. And I think that was a really good effort for Atletico to get by them. But it does show the kind of Jekyll and Hyde nature of the side. Of kind of their home and away, but I think just given what we've said there, and Dortmund's approach in Europe, I think this all points to under goals again. I mentioned the first leg stats there previously, but Dortmund, I think, clearly take a different approach in Europe than they do in the Bundesliga. Five of their six group matches went under 2.5 goals in the Champions League this season. Both of the legs against PSV went under 2.5 goals. And I think Terzic will know that kind of Atletico's home and away. I think they'll play really conservatively. They'll play to keep it tight. And I don't think under Diego Simeone we're going to see a really expansive Atletico Madrid. To me, the most likely outcome here is a kind of a 1-0 or a 2-0 Atletico win. So I think, again, I'm happy to take under 2.5 goals here, around 1.9 in the exchange.
And Mark, Atletico, you look at their numbers at home, they're obviously very, very good. But they did lose to Athletic Club in the semi-final of the Copa del Rey. And if you go back even to that Inter tie, if Thuram puts his chance away on the counter-attack, Inter go through. If Barella takes his chance on the counter-attack, Inter probably go through. So you have to give them enormous credit for knocking out the best team in Italy but they're not flawless at home.
They're certainly not flawless, no. And I think you have to respect the record and respect the long-term numbers,
sure.
Because it's not just domestically or across all comps this season. They've played 16 knockout ties at home across the Calderon and the Metropolitano under Simeone's charge. They've won 10 of those. They're unbeaten in those 16, and they've conceded 4 goals. So that's 12 clean sheets in a 16-game sample, which is across a, you know, still not the largest of samples to read everything into, but that's across 2 different venues and across many different seasons too. So I think they do command respect. I think the wider picture of this tie is fascinating purely because of the timing and, you know, clearly it's a poorly kept secret about the difference between Atleti's form home and away, and having to play this fixture first probably isn't ideal. It means for me, they'll have to go out and try and stamp their authority from the off, really, because they just can't be trusted anywhere outside of the Metropolitano. They should be well rested, though. Cup final weekend in Spain meant no La Liga matches. And for me, that's an all-in high-energy approach from Atletico here. Yeah, their record across all comps this season at the Metropolitano, 18 wins and just 2 defeats. And yeah, I think Atleti on the nose here around 183 is fine, to be honest. I think it's probably worth the extra boost to include under 4.5 goals, and you get better than evens for that, considering it is the first leg of a knockout tie. I think it's difficult to envisage this game kind of escalating into this high-scoring shootout. This isn't the Dortmund side who reached the Champions League final playing swashbuckling football. Under Terzic, they can be functional. He said himself they do have to opt for substance over style in some of these big matches, and I don't want to dismiss them by any stretch because they've performed way above expectations in this competition, and I think Terzic has proven he's capable of setting up a side to be competitive, especially away from home. Just
well, it just won in Munich, and that was the game plan, really. That was the, in the sense that that wasn't about individual quality per se. They actually just went there, said to Bayern, well, we're not going to play through the middle. If you're going to beat us, you're going to have to get wide, and they couldn't do it. So, you know, as much as I've been critical of Terzic and Dortmund at times, actually, in some of the big games, they've played pretty well.
They have, and they've only lost once in 15 away trips, and that was at PSG, where I think they were well within the game for 50, 60 minutes of that.
Stitched up with a penalty.
Yeah, but you know, the bigger picture on Terzic is he's still probably not the man. You know, even if Dortmund got through this tie against Atletico Madrid, they're struggling to finish in the top four in Germany right now, and that's just not good enough for a side of Dortmund's caliber. But yeah, stylistically, this game I guess could suit them. But you know, playing on the counter attack, if you've got the pace of Marlin and Sancho and Adeyemi, you know, they're players who've pace and trickery to oppose teams on the counter. But the big question for me is, can they survive the suffocating press? Because I think in that second half against Inter, yes, Inter had opportunities, but Inter are a better side than Dortmund, and Atletic put them under immense pressure, immense intensity in that second half. You felt the crowd kind of get behind them too. And I think that will be something similar on Wednesday night when this game takes place. And just a minor negative, I don't read too much into this just because of the small sample, really, but I think it is worth noting and worth mentioning that whilst Dortmund came through a very difficult group and they played PSV, obviously, in the knockout stages too, Gregor Kobel and the defence have been performing above expectations in terms of goals prevented. So Dortmund's XG against is 8.9 in the Champions League this season. They've only shipped 4 goals. And that's almost 5 expected goals, fewer than expectations, which is unsustainable. And you know,
well, they've done that in the league as well. Kobel's got the best post shot XG in the whole league, so that tells its own story as well, that really they should have been letting in more goals in the league as well.
Yeah, so we'll see, but I think backing Atleti even money to win and under 4.5 goals is fair enough for the price.
Jake, I think Antoine Griezmann's going to be the best player on the pitch for either team, but I always think that in any game that he plays, because I'm wildly obsessed with Antoine Griezmann. But it is true. Without him, they don't qualify against Inter. It's as simple as that. Without his influence, without his quality, I thought he spent the first 20-25 minutes playing his way into that second leg, but once he did, everything went through him. So you've got to think that he's going to have a huge influence on this game and on this tie.
Yeah, it was remarkable, really, because he was just coming off injury as well. They kind of rushed him back for that game just to, obviously, that was their season. Look where they are in the league. They're fighting for a Champions League spot themselves. They're qualifying in that round against Inter. But yeah, some display from him. Everything the guys have said, I'm just going to quickly rattle off pretty much the same stuff. I'm taking Atletico to win. Just on the nose, 1.84, I think it's a huge price. As Mark just alluded to, Dortmund's defensive data is not very good in the Champions League, even though they've got good results. Conceded 1.84 expected goals against per game. And yeah, they came through what you call it, the group of death. But PSG, are they actually as good as what we think they are? In Milan, they were poor at the start of the season. They're looking good now. Newcastle have just been kind of meh all season. So is it really that tough of a group? And to finish top of it is still impressive, and they do deserve some credit. But this is a different kettle of fish, especially as you mentioned at the top, Kev. Atletico at home are a completely different proposition to Atletico away. They've won all four of the home Champions League games. They've won 13 of 15 La Liga games. The only defeat came against Barcelona, which was like 3 days after they played Inter and beat them on penalties. So I can kind of forgive them that defeat. Yeah, they're processing those matches across all those games. 2.2 expected goals for, 1.0 expected goals against per game. So it's a really strong process. And I'd be very surprised if Atletico don't come away with a victory in this first leg. And, you know, even if you want something a bit bigger, if the 1.84 is a bit short for you, then I definitely would look at doubling them up with Arsenal and doing an Atletico Arsenal double across the 2 nights, because I think they're the two strongest teams in those ties, and they're playing at home as well. So that might be something to look at.
Jake beating up on the Germans there. I'll try and forgive him
Oh yeah, there's
for
two
that.
German teams.
Bundesliga slander's not allowed on this show. You know that by now.
I did say Griezmann was good, though.
You did, to be
You let
fair.
me off.
Yeah, it's a mixed picture there. You mentioned Paris Saint-Germain, and they're a shade over evens to beat Barcelona. Mark, I do think that's too short, but I have said for a while that I think. With now they're past all this nonsense of Messi and Neymar and Galacticos, they actually look to me to be a more effective unit in this competition than they have done for years. Because when they had Mbappe, Messi, and Neymar, it was basically 8-3. You had three dudes who didn't do anything without the ball, and you cannot win a Champions League that way. So at least with a philosophy in Luis Enrique, at least with some good young players, and you still have Mbappe who's up for it, they do seem a better proposition in this than they have for years, to me anyway.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And I'm not going to lie, I found this tie the most difficult game to assess, to analyse, to have a sort of a firm view, if you like. And you know, PSG's ultras have already sent out a battling cry to their fans ahead of this game. They're looking to try and make the Parc des Princes tremble for their rivals. And so it should be a bit of a frenzied atmosphere, as it tends to be on big Champions League nights. The stakes are high. Yeah, the market makes PSG slightly the better of the two teams to qualify. And obviously, if this game was played on a neutral venue, PSG would be favourites. And they have an excellent home record in Paris in this competition. The likes of Real Madrid, City, Juventus, Dortmund, Milan, all been beaten here in the last 3 years. But I'm finding them a little bit difficult to place. I wonder whether it might be a year too early under Luis Enrique's master plan, and it might be a year too late next year because Mbappe won't be there.
Yeah,
But
one of Mbappe. They're going to do it. They might as well do it now.
exactly. He's been talking the game up, talking the tie up, talking the Champions League up. So he's clearly in the mood after sort of the saga which has been rumbling on domestically, him being hooked after, you know, an hour, not even starting some games either, with PSG looking to try and move on without him. But yeah, clearly he and his motivation is good enough to win any match, really. But I just look at Barca and I wonder, clearly Mbappe is world class, I'm not denying that, but Barca have kind of had this threat many, many times before domestically when they play Real Madrid with Vinicius. And I'm not saying every time they've found a system that tries and successfully thwarts Vinicius, but they've
Definitely
often sort
didn't
of
last
switched.
time. Didn't he run absolute riot last time they played him?
He did, but Barca were in a pretty poor place right then, and they
Yes,
have
that's true.
improved. And you know, quite often they'll switch Araujo out to right back. He's got the pace, the physicality to deal. And not every time, but occasionally he does tend to have a good game against Vinicius. And you know, they've got Koundé there, who's got pace. Pau Cabarsí might keep his place as well at centre back, which is remarkable. The guy only turned 17 this year, but he's already
He's
played for
amazing.
Spain.
Him
What
and
an
Lamine
impact he's made.
Yamal are they are children. They are children playing in the Champions League, and not just playing in the Champions League, but playing well. It's mad.
It is mad, and I think we have to keep pointing that out. But you've got a 16 and 17-year-old playing for Barcelona in the Champions League, which is just astonishing. Still no Pedri or no Gavi, and you know, you just hope that Lamal and Kubasi aren't treated in the same manner as those
This
two
is the
players.
worry, isn't it? This is the worry that they'll go, "Ooh, we have these lovely shiny things," and it's like, "Oh, we broke our shiny things because we used them too much." Because Pedri and Gavi are just all over the shop now, aren't they, physically?
You know they're going to do it. They
Yeah,
won't
I
learn their
know.
lessons. So
I know.
enjoy them while we can, because they might not be around for long. But yeah, I guess the positive is De Jong and Christensen are back. They're available, so that gives them a bit more solidity. But yeah, whilst performances haven't necessarily dramatically improved since Xavi said he was leaving, results have, and I think results do breed confidence. So I think Barcelona feel like they're heading back in the right direction right now. They're playing with a bit more cohesion, even if they aren't sort of the same sort of team we sort of fell in love with under Pep Guardiola a couple of decades ago. But they're making moves, I think, in the right direction. Clean sheets, consistent clean sheets, and they do have quality in forward areas. And so yeah, I just wonder whether they're capable of going to the Parc des Princes and getting something. But their away record has been actually pretty good all season. Just two defeats across all comps, both of which I think came in the Champions League when they'd already qualified, if that's right. But yeah, I think winning in Paris is always difficult. But trying to find a kind of positive angle in these two teams, I've just waffled on for long without going to give you an official bet, because I'm just going to enjoy this one without sort of having to sort of side with either team, because I find it quite fascinating. If you're pro PSG, I want to see what the other guys fancy too.
Yeah, Jake, you look at Mbappe, and I have a different read on Mbappe to a lot of people, because I think they see him as some kind of flouncy diva who kind of, has all these demands and what have you. I actually just see him as a world-class player who wants agency over his future, and that's fine to me. I don't see that as a problem at all. He's one of the most marketable players on the planet, one of the best players on the planet, and I think there's no problem with him wanting to decide what he does and not be pushed around by Paris. So that's the personality side of it. The quality side of it is numbers are outrageous in terms of the number of goals, the number of assists, and it's over such a long period of time. He made his 300th appearance for Paris against Clermont at the weekend. He's got 251 goals, I think, and over 100 assists. That's insane.
Yeah, it's just bang average, isn't it? I mean, needs to pull his finger
Rubbish.
out of that bloke. He's a joke. He's a bit of a cheat code as well when you get to in certain kind of matchups. You give him any kind of space and he just terrorizes you. You just think back to the World Cup final, and he basically single-handedly dragged France to extra time in that game and nearly won it for them. So yeah, he's the obvious one to stop. And yeah, it's always strange, isn't it? The talks coming out of France, and that him and Enrique have fallen out. He takes him off every like half, like every game, an hour mark and stuff like that. Well, maybe he's just trying to save his legs for the end of the season. Don't want to run him into the ground. They've got players in forward areas like Gonçalo Ramos who can come in, or Colomwani. It's not like they're swapping Mbappe for me, is it? It's not like I'm going up front for PSG for the last half an
Luis
hour.
Enrique, Oscar Thorpe is the one for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm number 17, Luis, if you're listening.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I'm definitely looking at this tie with a similar view to Mark, in the sense of Barcelona's defensive numbers are very good, and I think they could stifle PSG. It's a young PSG team for the most part. They're young in the infancy of what Enrique is trying to build. And yeah, Barcelona are similar in the sense that they've got quite a few young players, but they've still got a very experienced spine. And you think of the likes of Gundogan, who's in the midfield, who
Yeah,
won the Champions League
he's a
last year.
massive
You've got
player.
Ter Stegen in net, who's when he's at his best, he's probably one of the best goalkeepers in the world. And you've obviously got Lewandowski at the spine as well. He's been there and done that as well. So I personally am very surprised to see Barcelona as outsiders to qualify. I've actually had a little nibble on Barca's to qualify price. I think they should be favourites. And this individual matchup, you've got Barcelona, you can back them to avoid defeat at 1.96, and that looks huge to me. That looks really, really big for a team that have lost just twice in 19 matches all season. Both came in the Champions League, admittedly, against Shakhtar and Antwerp, but both of those games were heavily rotated teams, and after they were pretty much already qualified, or I think the
They
first
were on the
defeat
cusp,
was
weren't
on the
they? They were
cusp,
pretty
yeah.
close to qualifying,
So
yeah.
they were like, they were kind of half concentrated on those games. So I'm happy to kind of forgive that. And domestically, they've conceded just 0.93 expected goals per game when playing away from home. So they've been extremely solid. And I definitely think that that's that kind of playing in that kind of way is a good way to approach this PSG game. Because I think if you nullify a couple of their attacking players and their creative players, like, you're going to get chances because PSG are so wide open themselves at the back. So, yeah, and even so, PSG at home, they've been okay. They've won 8 of 14 Ligue 1 games, which for PSG standards, actually pretty poor.
Yeah, they did but dominate. They're not really bothered, though, are they? I mean, they just kind of
wander through
Liga, don't they, really?
And that kind of goes back to what we were chatting about then, about Mbappe. He's like, you know, he probably wants to just a new challenge where he actually knows that, all right, I'm in an actual title race this season. I've actually got to, you know, the pressure's on every single week. Whereas at the minute at PSG, it's not, is it? Like, oh, you know, we'll play Marseille away, get reduced to 10 men. We'll probably turn it on for 10, 15 minutes, win 2-0.
That was a bit mad, wasn't it, actually? Le Classique, which is supposed to be a really intimidating situation. They have a guy sent off and just go, yeah, well, we can still win this in second gear anyway. It's a bit odd.
And it's that age-old debate. I feel like we have it every year on this podcast of like, how can you quantify how good PSG will be when they play against good teams? Because they play against in one of the lower-ranked leagues of the Big Five. So this is a big step up for them. I think Barca's defence is going to do a bit of a job here, keep PSG out. Just another shout-out for the centre-half, Kubasi, who looks an absolute player. He played 11 times and then, right, you're playing centre-half for the Spain national team now, lads. Go on. The last two friendlies. He looks like a really serious player and probably the fix of all the problems, to be fair. They've been missing a really stalwart centre-half, really, since Piqué left. But one other bet, I didn't realise Christensen was possibly available for this. This is all team news related. Definitely check out the team news before you place this bet. But
yeah, he's back in training, isn't he? They're being quite tentative with him and De Jong. I'm like Mark, I expect them both to be available.
Yeah.
But they're being a bit tentative with them both.
So for me, I'd be waiting until the lineups are announced, having a little look at how they're set up. And if Christensen plays, it's highly likely he'll play as a holding midfielder.
Yeah.
The bookmakers haven't quite cottoned on to that in terms of car prices. So if you can get if he is lineup holding midfielder, back him to be carded because he's played, I think his last five games he's played in holding midfield or six games he's played at holding midfield, he's been carded four times. Because it's a different game, isn't it? It's a bit alien to him. Yeah, you've got people behind you now, buddy, instead of just in front of you. So that'd be one to keep an eye on. But again, just wait for that starting lineup.
Emmett, if we spin it back in time, I seem to remember when Barcelona weren't guaranteed to win La Liga last season under Xavi. You were very pro-Barcelona. That was when the price was decent. And you felt they were a stronger proposition than Real Madrid. What's your take on them this season then? Because they're 8 points behind Real Madrid. As the guys have said, they've improved results-wise recently. There just do seem to be a few gaps here and there. But then they've got some world-class talent all the way through the team.
Yeah, my take is that if they had close to everyone fit, I'd fancy them to reach the final. I think they have a similar profile to Inter Milan of last season, in that Inter Milan last season had similar underlying numbers to Napoli, who were top of Serie A, but they kind of had poor finishing. But their underlying stats are really good. And obviously they got lucky with the draw, but Inter were kind of a lot better than their league position, and they kind of showed that in the Champions League. And similarly, like, if you look at any expected goals, you look at Barcelona's numbers are better than Real Madrid this season, and they have seemed to, since the Xavi, usually doesn't go this way. I thought Xavi, when he announced he was going to resign at the end, he's going to leave at the end of the season, that he might end up getting sacked before the end of the season. But it seems to have worked out positively, and they've rallied
around him, haven't they? Because he looks like a haunted puppy. So it's kind of they're all trying to kind of we'll try and help you out. And Laporta's talking about trying to keep him as well. So it's a strange situation, but I think because he's such a Barca guy, the players have kind of rallied around him a bit, haven't they?
Definitely, yeah. And I'm just really skeptical of PSG as well. Like, I know, I agree with you that you can't fully read into their kind of Ligue 1 numbers, but like, by expected goals, you have the sixth best defense in Ligue 1, and no matter how disinterested they are, it shouldn't be that bad. Is it like with the players they have and the gap in quality and resources with them and the rest of Ligue 1, it shouldn't be that bad. I'd just be, to me, if you look at the match prices they've been going off the Champions League, the market is kind of screaming at you, we don't rate this team. Like last in against Real Sociedad, who were sixth in La Liga, PSG were over 2-1 away from home on that second leg. Like they were only 1.8 at home to Sociedad in the first leg as well. And so listeners have an idea. Usually in the Champions League, if teams are rated equally with home advantage, the home team will be around 2.2, I'd say, in the first leg. So the market is telling you that that they didn't think before the Sociedad tie there was too much between PSG and Sociedad, which I think is worrying for PSG. Earlier in the group stage, like PSG were as big as 2-1 at St. James's. So I think there's definitely, I think the market doesn't fancy PSG, which is kind of informing my opinion as well. But just the doubts around Barcelona's injuries are what would stop me really pulling the trigger on Barcelona, just because like their whole midfield, bar Gundogan, is basically out here potentially with the doubts around Christensen and De Jong. So I'd be just I'd if I want I agree with Jake's opinion, but I'd want to wait to see the teams basically, but before pulling the trigger on Barca to qualify. But I don't think they necessarily should be underdogs here. But I'm really going to wait for them, I think, for the second leg, because PSG's away form in the Champions League has been bad this year. They were like they were blown away by Milan, blown away by Newcastle. I think Barcelona might really do a job on the second leg at a decent price. So I'm probably going to wait the second leg. And as well, there's a chance Gavi might be back in that second leg. I think whatever about the first, I think Christensen and De Jong will definitely play in the second leg. But I like, again, and I'm getting boring here, but I think I like the under 2.5 goals again. I think it's a good treble for kind of punters here. I think Barcelona would play very defensively here. They've kept 5 clean sheets in their last 5 La Liga matches. They limited Napoli to only 6 shots in Naples at home. And whatever you say about Napoli, they do have a decent attack. So I think
Yes.
Barcelona, with the injuries in their team, I think would play really defensively. I think under 2.5 goals and odds against here looks fair.
It's only me just waving a small French flag here, thinking that Paris might do something. If you want to be notified every time a new episode of Football Only Better goes live, make sure you follow wherever you get your podcasts. And for the YouTube version, make sure you like and subscribe to Betfair's new channel for non-racing content. Just before we go, a couple of games from the Europa League quarterfinals. Jake, I'll start with you. Liverpool against Atalanta. It's been quite a bad week for Atalanta. They were overrun at times in that Coppa Italia semi-final at Fiorentina. It was only the fact that Kanaseki had a brilliant game in goal that kept the score down to 1-0. And then they got done at Cagliari at the weekend, and that's hurt their Champions League hopes. So they don't go into this in particularly good form.
They don't know. And it's not exactly the best place to go, is it, for a team that's not in
No,
very good form?
absolutely
Fortress
not.
Anfield. Yeah, they are obviously, Liverpool will be reeling after that 2-2 draw. No idea how that finished
Oh,
2-2.
don't get me started, honestly.
Liverpool, what was the shot count like, 19-0 at half time or something like that? It should have been out of sight, out of
Gone
mind.
there twice, Liverpool. Gone there twice. And it's been like playing a League Two team for big stretches of the game, and they've not bloody won either time. Horrendous.
For any of you
There we go.
listeners, Emmett is literally covering his ears like this. He doesn't want to hear it.
Oh, Emmett should be pleased that they managed to somehow escape with a win in the FA Cup and then escape with a draw on Sunday. But there we go. Never
Yeah.
mind. Not that I'm angry about it or anything like that.
No, we can't tell. But yeah, Liverpool at home, their record speaks for itself, so I won't go too much on about that. But what we kind of know from Atalanta is that they are a very attack-minded team. We've seen it for years now. They had a little bit of a kind of halt on terms of being open and expansive, and I think that was partly due to players and
Yeah.
sales and just a little bit of turnaround in the playing staff. But they're back to being fun to watch. Goals have started to flow again, and yeah, I think they can go to Anfield and score at the very least. That's all I need for this, really, is I need them to score once, but then concede multiple times, because I'm back in Liverpool to win and both teams to score, which is 7-5 on sports. What you might get a bit bigger on the exchange. Yeah, Liverpool, both teams have scored in 35 of their 49 games this season, so it's a really high click rate. It kind of shows you the defensive kind of frailties that they still have, even if their attack is, monstrous going forward. At home in the Premier League, they've won 13 of 16. Nine of those have come with both teams scoring. Sheffield United, Burnley, Luton have all scored at Anfield. Toulouse have scored in the Europa League. Sparta scored in the reverse leg. Granted, it was a bit of a changed side, but again, Liverpool trying to fight on all fronts. I wouldn't be surprised if Klopp did ring a few changes in midweek, even against a decent team like Atalanta. And yeah, Atalanta, away from home, they've scored in 18 of 21 matches this season across all competitions. So yeah, I comfortably ex I fully expect Liverpool to win very, very handsomely, maybe 2-3-4, but Atalanta, I think, will at least get one.
And finally, all Italian clash, Milan against Roma, Emmett. Roma won the derby against Lazio at the weekend, which was the first time they'd done that in 2 years. And then Gianluca Mancini, who got the winning goal, waved around a Lazio flag with a big rat on it instead of an eagle. So that was very amusing, although he might not be amused when his fine comes through the post.
Was
But
that the
Milan.
second? Like that was like that must have just outranked the Dybala shinpad because that was also
Oh,
quite
yes.
top housery.
So, if anybody hasn't heard or seen this, Paulo Dybala, who of course is Argentinian, won the World Cup final along with Lionel Messi and company. He plays for Roma. Matteo Guendouzi plays in midfield for Lazio. He was on the bench for France in that World Cup final. They had a bit of a to-do, and Dybala took his shin pad out, which had a lovely picture of Dybala celebrating the World Cup win. So that didn't go down particularly well with Monsieur Guendouzi. Milan, though, Emmett, 7 wins on the spin. Rafael Leao scoring and assisting. His numbers are really good since the turn of the year. I think he's got more goal involvements in all competitions than any other Serie A player. And you've got Christian Pulisic on a tear as well. So it's quite a high quality clash, this.
Definitely, and I kind of I opposed Roma with Lazio last weekend, and kind of it was a brutal game. The Roma derby was a brutal game. Other than those kind of moments of kind of brilliant esshousery, like the game was very little to write home about. And I still want to oppose Roma under De Rossi. I'd mentioned going into the kind of Roma derby, they'd conceded over 100 shots in their last 6 matches. I don't think their process is that great. As you outlined, Milan have been in red hot form. Like since the, it's like a decent sample as well. Like since the turn of the year, they've 32 points with possible 39 in Serie A, which is excellent going. Like if it wasn't for kind of in Inter's dominance, they might even have got into kind of a title race in kind of previous Serie A seasons. So I think Milan are kind of a far superior team to Roma here. And I think the market has them rated, I think, too close together for my liking. I think 191 on a Milan win looks more than fair to me. I think it's a really good chance for kind of Milan for Milan to go deep in this competition. I think it's like probably. I think they've probably maybe a slightly more difficult semi-final, I do expect them to come through this tie, and I really fancy them to win at home.
That's all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Remember, all of our usual weekend previews will be up for you later in the week. All of our shows are on our YouTube channel for non-racing content, so make sure you like and subscribe. And all of the European games this week are going to be on our website, betting.betfair.com. So check out all of the previews for that. From Jake, from Mark, from Emmett, and from me. It's goodbye for now.